Resolution 24-600, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Zulak. We resolve that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McCullough is hereby reconvened into regular open session of Council at
6:32 p.m.
Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-601, moved by Councilor Haskell, second by Councilor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McCullough is hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held November the 19th, 2024. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Back into open session, so I'll ask for the roll call once again.
Councillor Morley Haskell.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Debbie Zubach.
Councillor Mike Heckenen.
Clerk Administrator Carly Britton.
Fire Chief Robert Morrison.
Mayor David Moore. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land in which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. Delegations and presentations. Are we all set for that? This is from the Canadian Red Cross Emergency Response Services, and I believe we have online Lou Vaillancourt. You wanted to go ahead with your presentation? Is he on there?
She is. She's just getting her microphone.
It's muted, or she's muted right now. But.
Yeah.
It's Louise. She goes by Lou.
Louise? Yes. Goes by Lou. Okay, sorry. I thought I worked on Vaillancourt. Hope I have that right.
We can't hear you, Louise. She's just going to log in and log back out. Her mic's not working. Do you want to move to my friend's status update?
Sure, I can do whatever you want. I can.
Well, she might come right back on, though. I don't want to hear her talk.
Turn up volume.
I can provide you some context, if you like, for who Lou is. In the meantime, while she's trying to get her stuff together, I did a CEMC meeting in the spring.
Hello.
Oh, there we go.
Hello.
Hello. Sorry about the video for a second. See if that works too.
There you go.
There you go. Looks good.
Hi, I'll just start by introducing myself. I have about 5 slides to share, and the topic really is about preparedness, community partnerships, and the role that the Red Cross does in all communities, which involves in recruiting volunteers, because they are really the key to the Red Cross. So let's see if I can share my screen. Okay. Host disabled attendee share screen share. It's not letting me share.
Okay, I'll just make you a co-host again.
For some reason. Okay. So by the way, just to introduce myself, well, Carly's I met already. My name is Louise Vidalco, but I do go by Lou because we have so many Louises and Lises in the organization, it just works better. I started with the Red Cross in 2012. I was a volunteer until 2018. I joined the organization 2 years ago now, 2-3 years ago, and I'm in the emergency management. A part of the organization, there is many different Red Cross services that we provide to the community, including in the North Bay area, and it's a wide-ranging area. Friendly calls and that kind of thing. My role is EMC. Entire screen, perfect. Sure. Okay, so I'm just gonna minimize this. Close this one. Close this one. Okay. So first thing I wanted to show, I think I have it here. Okay, let me just go to this bit. Okay. Okay, so tell me if you can see this.
Not yet.
Can everybody see this?
No.
I can't see you guys, so.
We just have, all we can see is your home screen.
Okay, so you're not seeing the window I just opened up. Do you see this screen with the buffalo?
No. If you stop sharing and then reshare with your screen on.
Okay, I think I know why. It's just because we have our internal windows kind of thing, and we have our, here, I'll just open another one. Just give me a moment. Can you see this now?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So this, so we use SharePoint. It's a great tool. I'm not used to Zoom anymore. So, hopefully I can do that. Okay, let me just hide this. Okay, so you can see the map now?
Yes.
Yes, you can.
Can everyone see the map? Okay. So, the Red Cross Emergency Management Services is divided into 4 regions. You'll see up here, this is Perry Sound region. This is the Nipissing regions. Both these regions are part of the area that I look after. And then we have the Northeast region, we have the GTA region, we have the South region, and the Western region. So the North region includes a lot of other areas as well, you'll see up here. So the area that we cover in the Perry Sound area is quite large. The difference with the north from the south is the vastness and the less amount of population, right? So that's the big thing I want to let you know. I'm just going to close that screen. I'm going to minimize that. And I'll open this one here. So what we do in the north, we are responsible for emergency support in 2 ways. We do PDA and ERT. PDA just means a house fire or a small amount of people impacted, and the ERT is a larger impacted event. What you'll see up here, and I'm going to share this with everybody so you can have this, this is our 800 number. Our 800 number is available 24/7. And it's available for the fire department, victim services, landlords, it's available for impacted individual, and you'll always get somebody at the other end. Part of the role of the, as a coordinator, is I get to be a duty officer quite often, like once or twice a month. What you're going to see further down is our contact information. Can you guys see this, or do you want me to enlarge it?
We can see it.
Okay. So the National Emergency Management Center, the standard number at the top, what you'll notice here is a provincial duty officer is coordinators from across the province who look after that line, like I said, once or twice a month. The number below is the duty officer direct line. So I'm going to share this with you, and you guys will have that for your emergency plans, for your police department, for anybody who wants, who needs to contact the Red Cross. I'm in here too with my phone number, and Adam Zubak is the regional operations manager for the North region. So again, the North region. So we'll try to make this a little bit bigger. Okay. So what you see here is the Red Cross volunteers. What we end up doing is we support people in Ontario with individual events or larger events. We have here contributed to 3,800 volunteer hours. We spoke about preparedness throughout the communities. We do site surveys. I'm sorry, Robert, it's not quite complete, but what I can tell you about the survey in your area is, or that community center, is it's great, but it's very limited to space. So as a congregated shelter, you're looking at about 50 people or less. So it wouldn't be ideal for a congregated shelter, but that community center would be great for registration and in a big event, or a great place to have people to start with. That would be a good place to set up. Okay, so just wanted to show you about the volunteers. Now, what I wanted to talk to you about is our services. So there are quite a few services. I think I shared this with you, Carly and Robert. You recall?
Yes, you did.
So the main services we do is, for instance, if there's a local fire, somebody calls the 800 number. Most of the time, fire department or victim services or somebody from the community will reach out to the Red Cross. We then do two things. We would, if we had local teams right in the area, we would mobilize our local team. In today's world, that's not possible in all small communities. I have gone down to areas at different ones, and so we would have our virtual team support them, and what we do there is we do the registration, we do the emergency lodging, we provide them with a prepaid card or an e-transfer to provide them with food, clothes, personal services. So this happens, and any fire department can call us. We don't need to have an agreement with any municipality. It's part of what the Red Cross does to help people. Really, what we want to talk about tonight, too, is in regards to preparedness with the community and preparedness for the community itself. So what you're doing in your preparedness is being ready ahead of time, building the relationships together. So at your disposal. What you would do is have an agreement, and there would be a cost associated with it. What we have now is what's called our just-in-time agreement. So if you need something important, an event happens, and you call the Red Cross, and you say, hey, we're going to need your help, then we talk to the person who's responsible, the mayor, or the person who will make the decisions in the emergency, and then we come up with a just-in-time agreement. The way the just-in-time agreement would work is you would say to the Red Cross, we need your help with this. We would say, yes, we can help you with these services, and we would mobilize our team to come and look after that. In the meantime, we would send you the just-in-time agreement, which discusses, it's the legal document that talks about all the details. So see here, as therapy, so long one or short one. And then often starts up, well, it's not that big, and it can end up a lot bigger. Okay? So we do, we put in, I guess at this point here, it's just a lot of the contact information, how we report. I'm just going to go briefly through this so you see what it's all about. So then again, you would select these services, emergency relief services. We have site managers. So that's the person in charge on site when there is a response that we are helping with. Again, we are not the decision makers. It's your community that makes the decision. We provide the services that you request. So registration is a standard thing we do. How many people are impacted, who they are, we do the registration. The reception and information, let's say there was an evacuation fire, and okay, so we're using your community center for the reception and information. People would come there, we'll say, okay, here's where we're going to send you to for this event. Like when there's a big fire in Alberta, people have to leave their own community. So part of what the Red Cross is going to do to not only build relationships with McKellar, but also help grow the partnerships with the communities around us. That's what's most important when there's any event. We're here to work together to build resilience so that when we, and be prepared for impacts, events that happen, and by working together, this is what we'll be able to do by getting to know each other. Family reunification, that's again would be in a big event where people had to leave the area, so it's a service we provide. Lodging is pretty well standard, so we have different types of lodging. Commercial lodging, the congregated shelters, and the family support. So if you're impacted by a fire, we're going to say to you, do you want to stay with your family, friends, or do you need a place? We had the First Nations community around Parry Sound, and we met them in Parry Sound and helped them out with service. So that's a standard service that we do all across the board. Up to 25 people, that's something the Red Cross can be involved in, and it's what we call a level one emergency. And it's part of the Red Cross services that we do. There's no real billing back or anything like that. We provide the food and the clothing in the form of a prepaid card or e-transfer. So both are available in the north. Some regions are further away and we don't have personnel, our workforce volunteers to go out on site. But we do, or we are able to have our what we call our GO kits, emergency kits, in every community. We have them in fire departments. We can have them in where they can be accessible. So then at this point, we could give them the card and we just fill it, load up the card for individuals. Okay, I'm just going to go down a little bit here. So these are all, so an L2, which is involved with the Red Cross, and say we have 100 people or we have an event that we need support with. So a level two is from 25 roughly, or we say 10 households. It really it's a floating number, it's not a hard number. From 25 to 150, 300 people, that would be considered a level two, where you guys would say, well, we've got a big event, we need help with all kinds of things, including food, transportation, that kind of thing. So that's a level two, and that is still part of my responsibility as a north, with the, again, the understanding that it's, you guys make the decisions, we come to an agreement, and then we go ahead and support you and provide all the services needed. We have, my goal, I have three goals basically for in the Parry Sound area, because part of my job is growing the team, building community partnerships, and all of us, we're all reviewing and preparing to be ready for, because things change all the time, for emergencies. So that's the preparedness part. So building, so having volunteers in the area is a big goal of mine. So if I am able to promote them, promote what we do, what the volunteers do, as we're supporting the community. Basically, that's in Toronto, we have a large number of volunteers. In the North Bay area, we have about 25 volunteers. In the Parry Sound areas, I have three firefighters that are part of ALLS firefighter team. So it's important, I think, that we, or that if I'm able to promote with your community, we can have local people involved that wear a Red Cross hat. It is kind of like a firefighter assistant, I say. So the training is can be a lot all the time, or it's ongoing, I should say, like a firefighter. And in this area, we don't get a lot of responses. On average, we get about one response a month throughout the areas. So 12 to 15 events during a year, let's say. Okay? So we do not only food, clothing, personal services are part of it. Safety and well-being is mental health support for people who are affected by a traumatic situation like a fire. There are criteria when it's beyond us, and we just refer to the qualified mental health path. If you're a PDA or ERT person, you can also be trained as a safety well-being person. You can become, there's different levels, so you start off as a responder, you can be a supervisor, you move up to site manager, and these are different roles that it's just a matter of course training. And the biggest thing is why we, like firefighters, try to get together and have practices so we can be ready when there is an event. Referrals, again, is just dealing with the local community and helping support and refer people to the services within the community. So that's the main part of any level one, level two event. Then there's more services that we could help with, right? Supply chain, more mental health services. I'm just gonna quickly go through this. And this is sort of what the just-in-time agreement would look like. And then I'll just go down to the schedules here. Just give me a second. Okay. So you would check off these boxes, pick the services that suits your community needs. We would write an agreement. It would be signed, and that's how we would. But we go ahead on a handshake. But then this is all of the documentation comes with it. An estimation budget that would be involved, and this is the same thing here. If I just put out a little bit more, okay. So the cost of personnel, travel, other costs, reception center, transportation, lodging, meals, personal service, other costs. Like if the clocks are done at the end, there's the tear down and the cleanup. So this would all be given to the community to make the decision and go ahead with it. Once an understanding that the service is required, and you ask us to come up. So let's say something happens in your area, but hey, we don't have all the volunteers. So what we do is, that's why an ERT volunteer is a responder who travels to locations. So what we would do is we would get as many people around the area, because you're closer to a different area than mine, and we would recruit people from there to come up right away. And then we would mobilize the teams, the site supervisors, everything that's necessary to come out and support an emergency. So I'm going to stop for a second because I'm battling a lot, and I'm just going to ask if anybody has any questions.
No questions.
Okay.
No.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I think there's one more thing here. Oh, not that. Okay. Okay. I'm just going to shrink the screen for 1 second because I might have had something on the other screen. think I'm back. If I can find the Zoom here. I'm so used to Teams, I'm sorry. Can you guys see this?
We can see your screen, yes. Lou, we've lost your microphone. Are you able to message her?
Yeah.
I'm not sure she can hear us.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
it looks frozen now, yes.
Give her phone number.
So at an emergency management meeting in the spring, the Red Cross was there and they did a presentation on these just-in-time agreements as well as memorandums of understanding and how they can support the communities for our emergency preparedness responsibilities. So we arranged to have Lou come out and she did a site visit, did a site evaluation, took measurements, saw everything that we had already in store, essentially, what equipment we had and what our emergency plan dictated. And then she was able to offer us essentially an explanation of what the Red Cross could do to support us. What this will do is it negates us from needing to, let's say, create a stockpile of cots, create a stockpile of food, create stuff like that, where we would be responsible for it, also the maintenance of it, the upkeep of it, the turnover of it, because things go bad and stuff like that. By activating the Red Cross with the just-in-time agreement, they would essentially pull in with a couple 18-wheelers and distribute the equipment that we needed here for us, and so we don't actually have to store anything. So there's no cost to us for this agreement. It remains dormant until it's activated, and then if it is activated, it is very likely going to be in the instance where we have declared an emergency, and thus we have access to extra funds and so forth anyways to help cover the cost of it. But it's not a money-making venture for the Red Cross. It is going to be very simple pricing in terms of how much it is to take care of a person, what kind of food, like how much food they get in a day and stuff like that. So it's nothing extravagant, but it makes things a heck of a lot easier for us. We also learned about just simple services that they offer for things down to a single house fire where you have a displaced family. I can give you a call at any time, and she would take that single family and put them up in a hotel and give them money for the day for food and stuff like that. So there's some very good services associated with what they have to offer. So unfortunately, she's obviously encountered some internet problems and can't finish her presentation, but it was in a meeting with the clerk, myself, our evacuation center coordinator, who is Chris Bordelow, and others, that we did the walk around with Lou, and we're all of the opinion that this would be a good service for McKellar to sign on to. So with council support, we would proceed with Lou once she presents us with the site assessment. So she still has an action item first before we can complete anything, and that is to provide us with a finished site assessment.
Just, I'm wondering, like she said that they're there to help, and that the township is still in charge, whoever's the supervisor here, the site manager, whatever you call yourself, but I'm wondering about the coordination there, because if they come with, like you say, a 70 or two, and cots and everything, who's in charge?
Well, that would be essentially up to the CEMC in charge. So we have, under the incident management, sorry, under the emergency management structure, we have an incident commander who is in charge of whatever the scene may be. If it's a wildfire, you know it's going to be me. If it's a weather event, it very well could be Mr. Stoneman as the operations manager. But in most cases, it's going to be Carly. It's going to be Mary, who is our new alternative CEMC as well. It could also be Chris, who can liaison and coordinate with the Red Cross because he is in charge of the evacuation.
I just wonder and make sure that's clear to everyone, because I've seen it happen. People get on site and they're all in charge, sort of thing.
Yeah. Under our emergency plan, which we passed back, I guess it was 2 years ago now, the new emergency plan that we built in the past 2 years ago is very clearly spelled out who runs what part of the show. So, I guess, unfortunately, Lou, are you there or no?
No.
No, okay. So, maybe we should table this for the time being, and we can have further discussions with Lou after she presents us with the site plan.
Are there certain requirements for size? Because I can't believe it can't be more than 50 people in there. But
so, the Red Cross has, just like when I do occupancy calculations,
right,
for buildings and so forth in the area, the Red Cross has their occupancy calculation that says one person on a cot requires X number of X amount of space, right? And so that's just how they find it works best, so that they avoid overcrowding. And just with their experience, which is a heck of a lot more than me in terms of housing large numbers of people, that's just what they find works. So it is surprising. I was surprised to hear 50, but it does make sense. We do, under the emergency plan, have two other shelters that we could use. We have applied under the emergency preparedness grant for backup power for Fire Station 1 and Fire Station 2, and both of those could be used as well as buildings to either house people or store equipment during an emergency.
And I'm just not sure, they're operating out of North Bay, I guess you said. What the response time would be to if something.
A lot of it's going to be predicated on what the emergency is. If we're
right.
dealing with an ice storm and closed highways, it could be a while.
Yeah.
So we're going to do our best with what we have. Under the emergency management sort of umbrella, we advocate, and I'm sure you've seen this on Facebook and other social media as well as the website, we advocate for people to have a 72-hour kit, for them to be self-sufficient for the first 72 hours, and that gives essentially emergency services and support services like NGOs, like the Red Cross and so forth, time to sort of get our feet underneath us. Because we're all dealing with the whatever the emergency is, we're all dealing with it personally as well as professionally. Right? So we have to rely on people to have a little bit of self-sufficiency in that.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, I'll let you go ahead with your other reports.
So the
month end first.
Pardon me?
Month end.
Well, I mean, you have a copy of the month end report for the month of October. Was there any questions or comments to do with that?
They don't need much time to respond. If they don't respond right away, move on.
No. All right. Very good. So I guess the biggest thing that you can see spelled out from there is that next year one of the main goals for our department is to complete our tanker shuttle certification. The time has come to recertify, and in order to do this, one of the things that we are really looking at is the inclusion of one, if not two, dry hydrants, which we have spoken about in the past being at boat launches and so forth. So that'll be one of the things that come up in the upcoming budget.
Okay. And certainly, the engineer is aware of that. It's just a matter of coordinating when he gets to look at it.
Yep.
To be in touch with you.
Yep, no, for sure. And then the last item that we had was just essentially housekeeping. It has part of our emergency plan. When we introduced that back in 2022, the commitment is that we have to update it every year to make sure that it's as valid as possible. So with the turnover within the township, as well as with the adoption of the community risk assessment that happened in the spring, a few things have changed within that emergency plan. And they're reflected in the documents that you have, just changes in roles, changes in personnel, changes in phone numbers. It was the odd spelling mistake that was changed to Mr. Creaser instead of Mr. Creaser, stuff like that, right? And all the hazard risk index information was all taken from the newly updated and newly accepted community risk assessment and reflected in the emergency plan now. So those are the same.
Well, that's excellent. That's we've already mentioned there are a couple changes that I guess Carly will pass on to you within the charts themselves. Nothing major.
Yep. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. So the essentially yes, it's housekeeping. It's just an acknowledgement that we have done the update, and then once I complete all of the updates on paper, we just email them out and update the binders. So as long as you accept that, then we're good.
Sounds good. Any other questions? I think we have a number of resolutions dealing with that. Okay, we have resolution 24-602, moved by Councillor Keckman, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the deputation from Lou Vaillancourt of the Canadian Red Cross to present the Canadian Red Cross response services and volunteer recruitment opportunities. Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Resolution 24-603, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haspin. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby received report FD-2024-22, month-end status update for October 2024 from Fire Chief Robert Morrison for information purposes. Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. And resolution 24-604, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Keckinen. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby received report FD-2024-23, emergency plan changes November 2024 from Fire Chief Robert Morrison, and further that the changes made by the Fire Chief in the emergency management plan are approved. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Great, thank you. Thank you. Resolution 24-605, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the minutes of the November 5th, 2024 regular meeting of Council and the November the 8th, 2024 special meeting of Council as circulated. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-606, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Keckinen. Be it resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby acknowledges receipt of the application submitted to the Ministry of Natural Resources and Forestry regarding the purchase of Crown Shore Road Allowance fronting 127 Brownlee Road in McKellar. Further, that staff be directed to complete the municipal comment form indicating that the township has no objections to the application. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-607, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskin. The result of the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby received the minutes of the October 24, 2024 meeting of the Township of McKellar Recreation Committee. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-608, moved by Councillor Keckman, second by Councillor Zulak. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the minutes of the
September 23rd, 2024 meeting of the Perry Sound Area Planning Board. Any discussion of those minutes? All the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried.
People didn't hold. It was just a question, they didn't know what it was. Oh, 19 of 25. Craig's welding and fabrication. You know what that is?
I believe that's for the shoes on the plows.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Another like plow work that needed to be done to get them ready for winter.
Okay. That's good.
Any other questions of the figures? Whereas the Township of McKellar has received its 2025 OPP annual billing statement indicating a significant 20% increase in policing costs compared to the previous year, and whereas this rise in expenses places an additional financial burden on our community, impacting our municipal budget and the services we provide to residents, and whereas the Township of McKellar values the essential services provided by the OPP, but is concerned about the sustainability of continuous cost increases of this magnitude. Now, therefore, be resolved, the Council of Corporation of the Township of McKellar respectfully requests that the Ministry of the Solicitor General review the current billing model for OPP services to seek ways to mitigate the impact on small rural municipalities like McKellar. Further, that a copy of this resolution be sent to the Honorable Michael Kirzner, Solicitor General, the Honorable Doug Ford, Premier of Ontario, the Honorable Graydon Smith, MPP, Perry Sound Muskoka, the Association of Municipalities of Ontario, Federation of Northern Ontario Municipalities, and all West Perry Sound area municipalities. Discussion? Councilor Zula.
Carly, do you know if Roshan's figured that the new cost into our budget?
He's currently working on the operating budget, so he has received this figure, so he will be working it into the budget.
Okay.
So on the cover page, it mentions that further the Municipal Policing Bureau will be hosting a webinar information session in October, November. An email invitation will be forwarded to the municipality advising of the session date. Have we received that email?
The treasurer may have. I can confirm with him.
So the mayor, Reeve, CEO, and treasurer, this is addressed to. So. Can we ensure that all those individuals receive a copy of that email, and council members as well?
If I receive it, I'll forward it.
And make sure that those individuals are added to their email list so that when important information like this needs to be received, that we're actually receiving it.
Any further discussion? All the questions, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. services. And whereas residents of Northern Ontario experience poorer health outcomes than their Southern Ontario counterparts, with significantly higher rates of avoidable mortality and opioid-related deaths, and whereas the perspectives from Northern Ontario in the Public Health Funding Review letter outlines critical equity considerations, emphasizing the need for an equitable rather than equal funding model that addresses these unique challenges in the North. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby supports and endorses the contents of the perspectives from Northern Ontario on the Public Health Funding Review letter, and be it further resolved that copies of this resolution, along with the endorsed letter, be sent to Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Kieran Moore, the Ontario Minister of Health, Sylvia Jones, Executive Lead Office of the Chief Medical Officer of Health, Elizabeth Walker, Boards of Health of Ontario, Nipissing MPP Vic Favelli, Barrie Sound Muskoka MPP Graydon Smith, Temiskaming Cochrane MPP John Vanthaw, the Association of Municipalities of Ontario, AMO, and the North Bay Barrie Sound District Health Unit. Discussion? Councillor Peck?
I think this is well done, and I think it's very important that the message be made to the ministers that, you know, there is differences between Southern Ontario, because it noted that the province is concerned about, you know, the costs of the Northern Ontario delivery of services compared to Southern Ontario. Well, I think it lays it out pretty well here and explains the reason why, and they need to be able to accept that that's a reality, that's a fact.
That's a good complete study, yes. Councillor Zula?
Do you think it would be worthwhile to send a copy of this to Fanon?
I can.
What do you think?
I think we're just sort of endorsing what they put out, but I don't think there's any harm in it. Any further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Okay, resolution 24-612, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Peckman. Whereas oral health is essential to overall health, yet many equity seeking populations in Ontario face challenges accessing basic dental health care due to low reimbursement rates that discourage private providers from accepting publicly funded benefits such as Ontario Disability Support Program, or the ODSP, and Ontario Works, OW. And whereas the Board of Health for the North Bay Parry Sound District Health Unit has recommended a provincial oral health strategy with a remuneration model that ensures equitable access to preventative and treatment dental services, especially for underserved communities, sir. Now, therefore, be it resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby support the Board of Health's recommendation for a provincial oral health strategy, including an evaluation of the funding model to better serve vulnerable populations across Ontario, and further, that this resolution be circulated to the Honourable Doug Ford, Premier, the Honourable Sylvia Jones, Ontario Minister of Health, Dr. Kieran Moore, Chief Medical Officer of Health, Victor Fidelli, MPP Nipissing, Graydon Smith, MPP Parrie Sound Muskoka, John Vanthaw, MPP Temiskaming Cochrane, Michael Shearer, President and CEO of Public Health Ontario, Ontario Boards of Health, and the North Bay Parrie Sound District Health Unit. Discussion? All the questions? All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-613, moved by Councillor Haskell, second by Councillor Ryland. Whereas municipalities face growing infrastructure needs, including roads, bridges, public transit, water systems, and other critical services, which are essential to community well-being and economic development, and whereas the current sources of municipal revenue, including property taxes and user fees, are insufficient to meet these increasing demands for infrastructure investment, And whereas the province of Ontario currently collects the land transfer tax, the LTT, on property transactions in municipalities across the province, generating significant revenue that is not directly shared with the municipalities. And whereas the federal government collects the goods and services tax, GST, on property transactions, a portion of which could be directed to municipalities to address local infrastructure needs. And whereas redistributing a portion of the provincial land transfer tax and GST to municipalities would provide a predictable and sustainable source of funding for local infrastructure projects without creating a new tax burden on residents or homebuyers. And whereas a redistribution of a portion of the existing land transfer tax and GST would allow municipalities to better plan and invest in long-term infrastructure initiatives, supporting local economic growth and improving the quality of life for residents. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar formally requests the provincial government to consider redistributing a portion of the land transfer tax collected on property transactions to municipalities, and further calls on the federal government to allocate a percentage of the GST collected on property sales to municipalities, and further that this redistribution of the land transfer tax and GST should be structured to provide predictable and sustainable funding to municipalities, allowing for better long-term planning and investment in infrastructure projects that benefit local communities, thus ensuring that local governments receive a fair share of the revenue to address critical infrastructure needs. And further, that copies of this resolution be forwarded to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, Premier Doug Ford, the Ontario Minister of Finance, the Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing, local members of Parliament, MPs, and members of Provincial Parliament, MPPs, the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, FCM, and the Association of Municipalities of Ontario, AMIL, for their endorsement and advocacy. Discussion? Councillor Haskell?
Yeah, kind of when I watch the news there, and I see our Premier is going to hand back $200 to all the taxpayers coming up shortly, I think, what does that $200 mean to somebody that's making $150,000 or, you know, or to $500,000, that means nothing to them. That money could have come in, been used for an infrastructure program for municipalities to use for their roads. Like, it's, to me, it's just like, well, the opposition party would say it's buying votes, but that money, we need that money for our roads. It's just to needy families, you know, I could see that. Yes, that's a good gesture. Give back some of the money that everybody's overpaying, but to hand back to people who means nothing to them. So, anyways, I just thought I'd add that in. That could have been part of it too, you know, asking for infrastructure money.
Any other comments? Councilor Kekin?
I think this is a good perspective. You know, it's the transactions are taking place in the municipalities and generating, you know, this tax revenue, the land transfer tax and the GST. So I think it's a fair gesture to request a portion of that be allocated to the municipalities.
Now, we tried it a number of years ago, and we had our MP in Parry Sound at a meeting, and I had talked to him and suggested taking a portion of the GST to the municipalities. Immediately shot down and said, that's not happening.
Really?
So I don't know whether it's things have changed in the government, but...
But I think this is a good perspective that it's because of the land transfer that's going on in that municipality. It's not across the board, give us 1%. It's give us a portion of the tax that's being generated because the transaction that's taking place in our municipality, I think it's quite reasonable.
Yep, so do I. Don't think it'll happen, but I think it's quite reasonable. So.
I think it's something that at least lends to being considered because it is logical and reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-614, moved by Councillor Kekinen, second by Councillor Zulak. It resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the Aquatic Environmental Report, Lake Manitowoc, prepared by Generations Effect, social enterprise of the Georgia Bay Biosphere for information purposes. Discussion? Councilor Haskell?
I think it's a very good report, a lot of good information. But it's nice to see that maybe our population on the lakes doesn't have a lot of effect. And I've been saying for years that a lot of the watershed coming into our lake is what really influences our quality of water. And for years, I go into the bush working, especially working with the snowmobile club, and you see all these new beaver ponds popping up. You know, every beaver has to try to build their new environment, and the water quality in these all these ponds is very poor. And but I was really glad to see in the last couple of weeks we've been doing some work parties, and I don't know why or how, but a lot of these ponds, the beaver dams, have deteriorated and broke, or whether man did or whatever, but a lot of them are being drained out, and that's going to help us in the long run. Because I can remember at one time, a lot of these places where the beaver ponds are, there was little creeks running through, and there'd be little perch and, you know, all sorts of little fish, and as clean as you could probably drink it and be okay, but you wouldn't want to drink what's out there in a lot of areas now. So, and it basically says that in this report. So it was, for that reason, I'm kind of happy to see that that's management of the beaver dams and ponds in the future is something that should be looked at.
Well, I'd just like to actually deal with the different report. Maybe Councilor Reisner calls to the Environmental Committee by somebody, you know, he's a professor or who he was, and talked about the little influence of the watershed. That was rather interesting. That was just a couple of years ago. So I'm just trying to, you know, what you're saying has great influence, and he said it was little influence. So I don't know whether Councilor Ryan, I won't put you on the spot, but do you recall anything that he talked about in his report? It was quite an extensive report as well.
I'm pretty sure right at the moment I'm off topic on that, but I mean, in terms of the phosphorus levels in the lake, which is early in the report, I can't remember where, it was rewarding to see that it's at least static and that it doesn't increasing. That's consistent with what John Jackson told us about current septic systems that have been built and things. In other words, that the phosphorus doesn't leak out. And, you know, that's good to know. Again, it's imperfect, but it's still a relatively good sign. And certainly the volunteers from really mostly the MLCA, but I mean related to the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee as well. I mean, Jennifer being first amongst them, spending oodles of time going out and doing all this testing. And I don't know, I think that she's presented here, but what's involved in doing a test in a single location, and it's quite onerous, quite frankly, and given her her accident last year where she broke her leg, it's remarkable that she got it. I see in here that I still haven't found the page, but that we missed doing it in 2021, logically because of COVID. I don't know that for a fact, but I mean, there was a number of things, a number just of facts in the document that I found helpful about the surface area of the lake and things. And I've seen numbers quoted before, but I've never seen numbers this high before. So I'm hoping that this is correct and complete. And I trust the source, don't get me wrong, but I don't. It is more than I've seen anyhow, so, and I hope that it's backed up by science, that's all. So, no, I think it's quite remarkable, and certainly, I'm just trying to remember Peter's last name, who's on the committee, and he said
Duffy.
One of the reasons they chose to move here, sorry?
Duffy?
Duffy, yeah. He chose to move here because there was lake water testing going on here. I've heard him say that in person, and I've heard him on video calls and things saying that. So, and it's kind of something I overlooked when I moved here. I didn't do anything like that, but probably should have. But, I mean, I think this is a real testament to a good relationship between Biosphere and MLCA and or volunteers of various kinds at the committee. So it's rewarding. There is a great deal of information. Frankly, before I came, I think I made it about halfway through. Just reading, and I wanted to make sure I read it all to understand it, but it's a very valuable report in my view, so, and a great deal of work and research and science that goes into it. The good news for the committee is that for the last year, Carl Wilson, who's a professor of, at UFT. I don't remember what he's a professor of, but last year he was unable to attend our meetings, even virtual meetings, whereas this year he was participating. He was on our call last week and offers some genuine expertise and or interpretation, not so much of this because we didn't have this report in front of us, but of a lot of other things. And I know Jennifer has told me that she's going to come to our next council meeting for the presentation on shoreline, and I should know this
tree
one.
Tree canopy.
Sorry?
Tree canopy?
Yes, yeah, which the committee has spent a lot of time talking about, and we have an imperfect version of that even at the moment, but it's a start. And again, when I get a great deal of comfort. I tell that committee every time I go to their meetings is by the end of the meeting, my mind is blown all the things that I knew nothing of before, and I've learned from listening to others. So I think we have some genuine expertise there. And Jennifer's also, I think, done a great job of seeking out new members, including Sue Poff's husband, whose name I completely forget, but I have met him. Sorry?
Mark.
Yes, Mark. He attended our meeting as an observer last week and offered some real insight into birding in particular. And again, I tend to dismiss that thing because I didn't grow up doing anything like that. But when you listen, you understand the environmental impacts of things. It was a real plus. And he's, I don't know if he submitted paperwork, probably not yet, but he wants to join the committee. The committee has a vacancy. And certainly, it's fair to say that Jennifer would like him to be a member of the committee. So, and honestly, I do say it at every meeting because it's true. I go there and just listen because I was never exposed to these things, but it's great to talk to people who know and most importantly care. They care about our lake, they care about our community, they care about people and the environment in general. So anyhow, the presentation she has or the deputation she has for our next meeting, it's a fairly lengthy document. I think it's 19 pages from memory. And it's imperfect. We had a big discussion. We don't need to talk about that right here, but we had a big discussion about whether it's a policy document or a bylaw document. But we can resolve that later. So.
Okay.
I just wanted to mention that Jennifer had some objections and voiced them to Georgian Bay Biosphere, so they are going to amend the report and send it back. So I don't know if council wishes to defer until they get the amended report, and I'm sure Jennifer could probably speak to it when she's here for
sure.
The next meeting.
Sure. She spends a huge amount of time researching, reading, presenting just to the committee and things, so.
I'm sure as to what the amendments would be. She
okay.
did mention E. coli levels at one point, but I'm not sure what else
yeah.
she's objecting to. But.
Yeah, as long as we don't get another colored copy of this, I think we talked about it before.
Yeah.
Just to reproduce that, but expensive. Well, we have it in our package. I guess we can bring it back when she talks about it next week. So you're suggesting maybe a deferral? Okay, Councilor Keckman, you okay with that?
Yeah.
I'll call a question then for a deferral. All those in favor? Not opposed? That'll be deferred. Resolution 24-615, moved by Councilor Ryan, seconded by Councilor Hoskin. Whereas no formal agreement has been established, and no start date has been scheduled for the work, and whereas the township intends to solicit quotations from other qualified agencies to complete the work, now therefore be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby rescind Resolution 2024-544, awarding the painting of the St. Stephen's Church roof to David Winter. Discussion?
So yeah, I have the, this is the contact information for someone who did a barn roof in McKellar for $1,000, so which is much larger than the St. Stephen's roof, which we had a quote of $5,000+ to do. So I think if we solicit quotes from different contractors, I think that's what we should be doing. That's our due diligence, to ensure that we're getting the best value for a dollar for our taxpayers.
Councilor Zula.
I just wondered, we never heard nothing back from this fellow.
No.
Any other comments? Call the question then. All in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-616, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Cuckman, whereas resolution number 2024-562 was deferred to the October 15th, 2024 regular meeting of council. Now therefore be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby authorize the Treasurer to remit payment to Belvedere Heights in the amount of $47,399 as requested in their letter dated October the 7th, 2024. Offset the cost of engineering and architectural services incurred in 2024 to support the addition of 22 new private rooms, and further that resolution number 2024-562 is hereby rescinded. Discussion? Councilor Cuckman?
I wonder if we can add an addition to that that motion. We have the in the last council meeting, the November 5th, 2024, they had provided a summary comment or discussion. Board of Heights, Belvedere Heights Board of Management discussion with municipal partners, and on page 9 it mentions no net impact on annual municipal operating levy. If we can include that somehow in the motion so that we have it documented.
How does that work with the resolution when we're giving the money then if there's no net impact?
Just to somehow have that comment in there that, you
it's
know...
supporting rationale.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's probably unrealistic to say that, but I mean, I think they said it in good faith. I don't have a problem that way, but how you can promise, you know,
I think
4 years' time, 5 years' time, 10 years' time? I mean, I don't think you can, but...
Well, we're being given a sales pitch here, and we want to hold them accountable that, you know, this is what you said, and we're holding you to your word, and we want to make sure that if you're going to make a statement, that you're going to be held accountable to it.
But I do think it's in good faith that they made that statement, but is it realistic? I mean, can we say that we're going to hold our taxes the same for the next year? No.
Well, we've heard some of these kind of sales pitches from this individual in the past, and it hasn't. So it's just so that we have it on record that we want to hold them accountable.
We're just fortunate that we actually put that money aside somewhere, because I know Whitestone, they haven't put it aside, and
no.
They have to budget it into the 25 budget.
So what kind of deadlines are they looking at? Because originally November the 8th, I think. And
yeah, but that's
that.
There's so many parts to this. It's really getting confusing. Tomorrow morning I have an in-person meeting in Carling with Belvedere regarding all of this, the 21 bids and a municipal service agreement with the Westbury Sound Health Center. And all of this stuff, because there's so many things flying around now, and like life lease, and then they sent the letter for the money for life lease, and so like we got to get it straight. What's the priority here? So after meeting tomorrow, then they want to meet with the municipalities again, but I think we got to get straight what the heck they're doing before we meet with the municipalities to tell them, you know, what's going on. So it's fast and furious, because there was such a deadline that was so close that they were trying to get everything, you know, ditch the campus of care, get all that stuff back in order, you know, get the new schematics ready for, you know, how they want the plans in. And they're saying that they're going to extend the deadline for this for us, but there hasn't, as of yet, I haven't heard of anything in writing. So hopefully it will all work out in the end.
I've often wondered with the Belvedere Heights Board of Management as well, the number of committees they have. That's one thing that we try to do as a council, that everybody's involved from the ground up. With these committees, are all members of the board aware of what's going on in these committees? Are there regular reports back?
Yeah, there's at the meeting, at our Board of Management meeting, you get your, all there is really is the Finance Committee.
There's no Building Committee?
No.
Okay.
No, the
finance committee, and they're basic the fu- and the way it's working right now is the chair and the chair of the finance committee are pretty well handling all of the applicant, and you know, the administrator and that, they're handling all of the application and all the different things to go through to get this grant moving, to get the, you know, the okay for it. So once that's all established, then I guess there will be, we'll know more tomorrow, hopefully.
No, that's interesting. There's only one subcommittee, because I remember more. But
yes.
But down to finance now, that's good.
No, there's that in governance.
Yeah.
And the governance committee. But yes, years ago when I was on Belvedere, there was probably five or six different committees.
I think we have to figure out the wording on that, because just something more on the lines of in good faith, where if some suggestions on how to, that, you know, in good faith, you know, councils
okay,
trusting their words.
Can
you
not refer to their letter?
That one's mostly talking about the
where it says, we kindly request that you remit these funds, where is it, the shared reserves, place their share into reserves.
What's the presentation
name? So this is October 4th, 2024, and this is the
decision of these partners.
Just so that we have that documented, that otherwise gets lost in the shuffle. And
No, I agree. If you just refer to the report, doesn't specify what in particular on that report that you're concerned about. So
yeah, so we need that wording, but somehow referencing that we're.
Well, you could defer it and get proper wording
yeah.
that you're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
So they want. Doesn't
or it might be easier
that?
To defeat that because we already have a resolution for the 47,000, so it can yeah, that one can come back after your meeting.
I think this is fine. It's just to get that wording, because it does reference the 47,000 in this report as well.
So what does it say? What's the new wording? Further than that.
My suggestion would be, I haven't seen your paragraph, but if you put that in as the second point here underneath the whereas, between that and then now therefore, right, because it provides background for why, right, and what that rationale is. And truthfully, the sentence, I have no criticism of the sentence that's the now therefore, but it doesn't actually say that we're returning money that had been given to them in the first place. Although, you know, if you get into the whole cycle, it becomes a nightmare, and I don't want to do that either. But I mean, when you read the letter, it's quite clear that we're simply returning money to them that they returned to us, because I was going to say over contributed. I don't think that's the right phrase either, but as an explanation, that's all. Because if you read the resolution as it stands, even without that change, it's not clear. Like somebody picking this up in a few years' time wouldn't know that we had previously paid it and they had returned it from that paragraph. It's clear that we're doing it, and that's valid, and I don't have any issue with it, but it doesn't really explain the history of the transaction. So
sounds like a deferral.
Yeah.
Or a defeat.
Are they expecting, do we need this so the treasurer can send the money?
Yes, the treasurer is waiting on direction
yeah.
from council to send
the
money.
But the question is, what is the end date for them receiving that money? Because have other townships paid back or given that money? If not, then we have time still to
mm-hmm.
defeat that or defer it and go back and get the proper wording that more people would be happy with.
So we could defer it then for 2 weeks.
Yep.
Well, it wouldn't still be November in 2 weeks. It'll be December the whatever it is
December
in 2 weeks.
Third.
That
wasn't November the hard date for the
yeah, but
I thought
I said it's changed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as long as we're not jeopardizing that for them or for us, for that matter. But
so I'll call for the deferral then. All those in favor? None opposed.
solution for that, so it's just discussion.
Okay. Maybe we'll have a resolution before we're done. Hunting prohibited on Balsam Trail, somebody in the resident has fallen and talked about it, was very concerned, because it was a high-powered rifle, somebody was on the trail, and actually this resident spoke to the person and discovered where he was from in the municipality, and he had a lot of crown land around him and suggested that he go back to the other property, not be on the trail where people are hiking. And I guess the argument, I'm just getting this secondhand, that it's public property sort of thing, and he came back twice and was doing the same thing again, according to this person. So then the question came, and I don't know whether we've done any further research on it or not, it is public property, it's an open road allowance or concession for the trail, and so what authority do we have there to put up a no hunting sign on that particular piece of public property? I know for the transfer station, we have it through legislation that you can't hunt within so many meters of the landfill site or the transfer station. And I'm wondering here, I've been told also by another resident that you can't fire from the roadway. You have to actually be on property. I'm not a hunter, so I have to get the rules from other people. But if this is considered a roadway, I mean, it was open legally, right out to the highway on the whole Balsam Trail. It's not for vehicular traffic, though, and I think that might be the catch in all of this. As I looked up some of the legislation in other places and even in other provinces, they were talking about that too. They wanted that enforced on their trails, that there be no hunting. But most of them referred to vehicular traffic, anybody using that. And so I'm not sure if we've got a loophole here that somebody can still hunt. Can we, I mean, the suggestion was to put up a no hunting sign. We went on this a couple of years ago, I think. The suggestion was to, for anybody hiking on the trail, to wear the colored clothing, because, I mean, the implication is that there were hunters nearby. So it's almost like we were accepting that there would be some hunting. You know, be cautious. Whether council wants to go that route, no hunting on the Balsam Trail. Again, it's hard to delineate exactly where the trail is and when they're on private property and when they're on the trail. And of course, to be patrolling it because of the bylaw that is to be enforced. What should we do?
Well, we don't allow ATVs and stuff on there, right?
Right, it's a hiking trail, Balsam Wilderness Trail.
You couldn't take an ATV through there anyway.
No, I know, yeah. But somebody might try. And I think when it was being done, that was questioned too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've walked it, and I would never attempt it on an ATV. Never.
So they were deer hunting? Is that?
Yes, that'd be the implication.
So
he said it wasn't just a bird rifle; it was for deer.
So they shoot a deer at the end of the Balsam Trail. How do they get it out of there? It's a pretty tough walk up some of those. So is there hunting allowed in McKellar Village?
Good question.
I'm sure. I have to go way back. If there isn't, I'd be shocked that there isn't a bylaw or some sort of law in place that you're not allowed to hunt on public lands in McKellar Township. Like you can't.
That would
go
be interesting to find.
Yeah. Well, like you can't go, like say, to the one here on the community center grounds or anywhere that is public lands and hunt. As a matter of fact, you're not even allowed to hunt on anywhere unless you have permission.
Yeah, because if it is private property, somebody shoots the deer, and then it's the person that owns the property, it's their deer.
Right.
And, like, that's the thing, too, like, for shooting the geese here, right? It's public property. You can't just come and shoot the geese. So I don't know. What could signs up?
It could be something for all public lands, you're right, but this was a concern in this particular area. And there's probably something, too, within so many feet of a residence.
Well, M&R, wouldn't they know? Like, you know, where you get your hunting license?
Yeah, probably.
They probably never answered the phone.
Yeah.
Ontario, or Service Ontario, right, where you get your hunting license.
Could just wondering, you know, at what point do we ask the Public Works to put up another sign there or add to what's there?
Oh, yeah, because there's so many signs.
Yeah.
You could put up a sign at the start of the trail, no hunting. I don't see any harm in that in case they are accessing in that way.
Right.
I don't think they are, but it's possible. Some people just...
Well, it's funny because I've seen cars there, like two cars parked there during hunting season.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, we should have a no hunting sign up there.
Well, in the interim, while we're investigating, we could still have Public Works erect those signs. There's two entrances, actually three, I guess. If you take off Highway 124, it's still open. Not being used, but...
Yeah.
But certainly the two, one off Center Road and one off Balsam.
That brings up a question, yeah, like unopened road allowances that are in the township, or, which are township owned.
Right.
You know, is hunting allowed on them? I really don't believe it is unless you get written permission from not only private property owners, but from the township to hunt on their property.
The question is, it because it's open, right?
Right.
I think it's a little different because it is a recreational walking trail that I don't think there's a lot of recreational walking trails that you can just go and start hunting on when there's private property on either side of it.
No, no. It would be like in Toronto, you went hunting in Hyde Park.
Yeah, there's a lot of shooting going on down there.
I don't know. So what do you want to do?
Well, I think we should at least put up a no hunting sign just in case they're not aware. That is possible. Some people just think, oh, I'll hit in the bush and hunt. Some people do that.
If they ask me, I tell them, go to your property. Cause, you
know. I wonder if...
Is there lots of turkey and deer?
You would think M&R would know, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it can be investigated.
Yeah.
It's been still...
You could try phoning Rob Gibson. I mean, I don't mean right now, but I mean, I'm pretty sure he would know that. So.
Yeah,
well,
he'd know right off the top of his head.
M&R.
I'm sure he would repeat what I said about you're not allowed to hunt anywhere without permission. That's the way it should be.
He's the other one I learned a million things from going to LCC meetings from, because we'll sit there and then he'll come up with all these things and you go, everybody else looks at each other and go, who knew?
Right.
But how would you?
Resolution 24-617, moved by Councillor Hassman, second by Councillor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby direct the Public Works Superintendent to post no hunting signs at each entrance to the Balsam Wilderness Trail. Further discussion?
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not walking trail?
No. Wilderness.
Okay.
Okay, call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Unfinished business. Anything on that list? That's been finished or should be added to?
So I've seen that Davenport is being contacted. Miller Paving, they give presentations as well, so I hope that both of them can kind of give the presentation to council. And they were actually the most
they got back to you.
Yeah, they were very enthusiastic.
And
Miller Paving.
Oh yeah.
Very enthusiastic, and they will tailor the presentation to the audience. And they seem that they were this is what they do. Like they have one section that just does this to provide information to anyone that's wants to be informed of their products.
Okay, on to the new business. I have one thing on there that maybe put you on the spot, Carly, with the dishwasher in the kitchen. I don't know what's happening there. Do we get taken on that or?
So I have contacted Hobart. Our 1 year warranty has expired, but they have asked me for the original bill of sale, and I'm hoping that they're able to work with us. I had said that this dishwasher is fairly new. It's been repaired multiple times, and it still continues to have issues. So I reached out to see if there was an extended warranty. we could be eligible for, or if there's something they can do. The representative for the area hasn't reached back out to me yet. We just sent him the invoice on Friday. So it's,
yeah, it's really
continuing.
Unfair. I heard one person was there for 9 hours. Is that right? Working on it?
He was there quite late, yes.
Yeah. And plus the fact that it's not fair to rent out the property, I don't think, if knowing that they'd be thinking anyway, unless it's in the agreement, that you have no dishwasher.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that, and I don't know, like you say, the original agreement, what kind of a deal it was, whether it was, usually it's the lowest price. I don't know how many prices were received. We'd have to check back and all that. But it's just unfortunate. Maybe it's just a bad machine. And somebody had mentioned it was a mortar board or something that was something technical, so I don't know. But it doesn't sound cheap. And as I say, we just unfortunate. When we rent out to weddings and things like that, it's just, you don't expect them to have to hand wash everything.
No, and apparently it's not cleaning the stuff properly.
Mm.
Like the cups and that, you know, they have the tea stains or coffee stains in them that have to actually wash them with bleach by hand.
Really? There are directions on the wall as to how, or some directions for people on how much soap or when anything, like they
there are instructions on the wall. I asked the Hobart rep, maintenance person when he was here if there was clearer directions, but he didn't know, so again, I'll have to reach out to the sales rep.
Of course, they're not working at all now, but I'm just saying if dishes aren't coming clean, that could have something to do with the soaping. How long ago did we buy that?
August
2023. Wow.
New and improved. The one that lasted 40 years or whatever.
I wonder too if, like, when, before they, if they get it fixed and everything and working right before you rent out the hall, or that somebody does a demonstration on how to use it, because like maybe people don't know how to use it properly.
I guess the question would be who does the demonstration though, because arguably staff aren't trained on how to use the dishwasher either. So,
well, maybe somebody that does know how to use it could show staff to use it properly, and then you know when the person comes, does the person come in that wants to rent the hall?
Sometimes they do like a tour.
Yeah, and then maybe they could, you know, if they decide, I don't know, how does that sound? You know, give them a demonstration or explain to them how to use it, and never mind just the instructions, you know, tell them face to face how it's to be used.
So there is communication going
there
on?
There is, yes.
And follow-up letters if they don't respond?
Yeah.
Okay. Public notices, announcements, inquiries, reports by council members.
I have one thing under new business.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Just one thing. Just someone approached me, and I hate to bring this up again, but it's the speed limits. Somebody was wondering if there was a possibility that they could, on Lakeshore Road, have a 40-click speed limit, because all the people are flying down there now.
I'm thinking we do have to revisit after the last round.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think the idea was that there are certain roads that might need adjustment, but not all of them.
Yeah.
So I think that's something certainly Public Works Super could look into.
Yeah, so it's Lakeshore Road that they're concerned with. You know.
And what is it now? Is it 50? It is posted, I think. It used to be an 80, so...
Yeah, but anyways, they were saying if they could reduce it to 40.
Seriously, it used to be 80?
Well, all the roads were. They didn't have
any limit. Yikes.
Yeah. There was another two, and I haven't heard anything from Lakeside since, but I think theirs went back to 50 maybe, and they wanted a 42, but
they
haven't heard too much. So I think that all has to be revisited, yes. Which roads in particular, and maybe down by the Stewart Park boat launch again was a concern that it was 60, and we were trying to reduce that down to, well, I guess all the 60s became 50s somehow, but maybe speed could be reduced there. But the same thing with all of these, you need the enforcement.
Yeah, exactly.
You need something to go on, and somebody that actually, otherwise, all the signs in the world aren't going to really help.
No, I know. But sometimes maybe if they see a sign, they might slow down. Or if the landowners out there shaking a rake at them or something. You're throwing the rake at them.
Okay, any committee reports, workshops you're at?
I just have some information from the library. Okay, we received a resignation from our librarian.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll be leaving. Her last day will be the 31st of March. So the library is in the process of posting in January. They'll be posting something, putting together a job description and that, and posting for that.
How long has she been here?
20 years or so. Yeah.
Long time.
That's it, and I told you about Belvedere, so.
Okay, anything else?
I attended the Chamber of Commerce meeting last week where they didn't have quorum, which is very odd, because usually the advisory board members like me don't count, but they usually have good attendance from the business owners and things, so that's the first time ever. So I got there and think, you could have told me, right? But
I thought the Chamber had been doing very well with their advertising and the calendars they put out.
Yeah.
Seems to be really moving ahead.
Just a bad day, I guess, but.
Yeah. Okay, Resolution 24-618, moved by Councilor Haslam, second by Councilor Ryan. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of Township of McKellar, to hereby receive the consent agenda for correspondence. Any discussion? Anything you want to pull from that? Questions, comments from the audience, either in person or on Zoom. Items on the agenda.
Just take your turn now. Don't be rushed.
Okay, hearing that. Member Resolution 24-619, moved by Councillor Tecknan, second by Councillor Zulak. We resolve the Council of Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby given bylaw number 2024-80. A bylaw to confirm the proceedings of council of first and second reading. Further read a third time in the past, the vote of council this 19th day of November 2024. All the question, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-620, moved by Councilor Ryan, second by Councilor Haskin. We resolve the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar adjourn this meeting at
8:07.
8:07 p.m. to meet again on November 22nd, 2024, for a special open meeting of Council to discuss the 2025 capital budget or the